Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. Well, how do you go from cops to kids, from television to books? My guest today will explain it all. He's Rusty Austin. He's producer of hit shows like Nanny 911 and Hell's Kitchen, now channeling his storytelling skills into children's books. His new title, An Awesome Bird, The Pelican, mixes playful rhymes with parenting insights, fun animal facts, and illustrations by middle school students. It's available on Amazon, Barnes Noble, and bookshop.org, as well as all the usual places. For everything about Rusty, go to rustyaustin.com. And Rusty, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. So how did you go from the cynical world of television to the other world of writing children's books?
Well, my wife and I retired in 2017 or 2018, and we spent about two and a half years traveling around the country in an RV. And I had been actually writing these short poems for kids for a long time, and I decided to make a second career out of it. So that's what I did.
Ah, okay. Well, before we talk about the book itself, I wanted to kind of discuss your background, which is fascinating in terms of how you got into television. You graduated UCLA Film School. What was it? What you mentioned community college. You didn't mention, but I noticed in my notes it was you were at a community college. Which community college was it?
It was in Colorado, and I found out was that these 4-year schools, UCLA, USC, all of them, half the kids drop out by the time they're in their junior year. So they're looking for community college transfers, get good grades, and you're in.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. But why did you decide on film?
I've always been kind of a storyteller. I started making movies in the eighth grade. So that kind of led me down the path of doing some more videos. When the video camera first came out, I was fascinated by them. And at UCLA, we had actually more commercial video cameras, not the home stuff that I've been used to, but it was an easy segue.
And then you got into the world of reality television. I mentioned a couple of them earlier in my introduction. How did you go down that path as opposed to non-reality television?
Well, I did, when I first got out of school in 1988, I did movies for a while. I was in lighting and grip, and I got a job in a post-production house that was doing a show called Survivor, and I got on Survivor the first season. And so I just like rode the wave of reality TV for the rest of my career. The money was good, so I stuck with it.
It's an interesting genre in the sense because you have to film first and then write the script.
Yes, that's how you do it. You shoot the show first and then you write the script in reality, and in scripted, you write the script and then shoot the show. So what we have in reality is we'll shoot 300 or 400 hours of tape for a 1-hour show. And then you have to like winnow it down and winnow it down and winnow it down and hone it down until you finally get to the very essence of it. So the editing is really where the whole thing comes alive.
Well, there's a lot of time and effort involved in these shows. And
yes.
And I'm surprised your marriage survived it.
there was times when I had to work. I figured out if you work three weekends in a row, that's 26 days in a row. And it's not easy.
No.
But we would do it. I mean, like, for example, when I was on Nanny 911, what happened was ABC had and Fox got into a bidding war for a show called Super Nanny, which was an English show. And ABC won the bidding war. And so Fox decided they were going to get Nanny 911 on the air first. So we were literally 24/7. I would hire anybody that walked through the door that could edit.
Well, how does that, and I promise you, we're going to get to the book in a second.
Okay.
I want people to be aware of your background, which I find interesting, and making that segue from reality television to books. And so we'll have plenty of time to discuss the book and the other books too. This one's called An Awesome Bird, The Pelican. But getting just back to the reality television, how flexible do you have to be when you're working those kind of shows in the sense of not so much time and energy, but even knowing what you're getting as far as shots? Because you don't.
Oh, well, you have to pivot all day, every day, because the one story that you thought was going to work doesn't work, but then another story comes up that actually works much better. So you pivot to that, and that goes on for weeks while we do editing. A lot of the times the stories that we set up work out okay, but then there's something else that worked out better, so we'll grab that instead.
So pull the curtain back just a little bit more. How often do you grab one of the principals in a series, a reality series, and tell them?
Yeah, go ahead.
And tell them to do something on camera that will trigger the other participants.
All day, every day.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in a way, it is scripted. It's just you're doing it on the fly.
Well, we call it produced.
Oh, okay.
Produced. It's produced.
Okay.
And the script comes afterwards. Yeah.
Okay, but what you're really doing is in your head you're writing what you think will.
Yes.
Okay. Good.
Yes, and a lot of the situations like in Hell's Kitchen was really all that stuff is really pre-produced, so we know what we have going in. With Nanny Island One, you're kind of at the mercy of what happens with the kids and the parents. Other shows, all the shows are different that way, but at the end of the day, they're all the same in that you spend weeks and weeks and weeks editing after it's over to get what you need honed down.
What was the most challenging show you worked on?
I would say Hell's Kitchen. I was on for 16 seasons, and the challenge of that was you shot two seasons in a month and a half. So you had, I think, 26 shoot days per season and 16 characters that you went out down to the winner. And then you would edit for 10 months. So it was a really intense burst of creativity all at the beginning. And then the long slog of editing, I guess is how I put it.
How do you keep from stressing out? How do you keep from
yoga?
What's that?
Yoga.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And make sure you get plenty of sleep. And the other thing is, after I finished one of these shows, the editing process, I would sleep for like 2 weeks. So it's very hard on you while you're in it. But once you're out of it, you know, this too shall pass. So you get to right. The point where you can sleep finally.
So you're functioning on adrenaline. And
yes.
When you finally stop, it probably takes a day or two for the adrenaline to leave.
Yes.
And then you crash for 2 weeks.
Yes. And I'll tell you a funny story briefly about Nanny 911. When we were first working on it, the executives at Fox were all very interested. And so they would want to come over and screen 2-3 times a week. And they would have their assistants call us at about noon and do a Starbucks order. So I'd send a guy out to pick up, you know, $150 worth of Starbucks. And then they'd call and say, well, we're coming at 3. So we drink all the coffee. They wouldn't show up at 3. We drink all the coffee. They wouldn't show up at 5. They'd finally show up at 9 p.m. And we'd already had, you know, 4 Starbucks runs in us. So we were just wired. The whole crew was just wired. And that went on week after week after week.
I mentioned adrenaline earlier. It sounds more like it's caffeine.
Yeah, a combination of both.
Okay. So you make your transition from reality television and in that business altogether to writing children's books. And you've always been writing. So how did you decide to focus on it? Again, your current book is called An Awesome Bird, The Pelican. And it's not just the pelican. It's got, I think, 40 different animal poems in it. And that's the point, too, is it's poems. And you involve kids in it, which is great. So how did you decide to go down that path? You retired.
Well, what happened was...
I know you retired.
I'm retired now, yes.
Right. And you decided you would not go full-time into writing, but clearly writing.
Yes. It's like a second career. But what happened was, after I'd been on Hell's Kitchen for a few years, I kind of needed something to do during the day to kind of help me get along. And so I started posting these short poems to Facebook. And at the time, there was a book that had been on Facebook called Go the F to Sleep that had sold like a million copies. It was viral. And so I thought, you know, that's a pretty good idea. Write something on Facebook and make it into a book. And my friends all read the poems and they said, these are good enough for a book. And so I hired my nephew to do the illustrations on his Commodore 64, believe it or not, that he had left over from the 90s of my first book, Beware the Grizzly Bear. And that's kind of how it all got started.
I love it. Commodore 64.
Yeah.
That's good. There's a new reality TV series, Commodore 64, but it's about a Commodore who is starting the base. Anyway, just thinking of that for a second.
That's funny.
Yeah. So how did you decide to involve kids with the book itself? Because in the book, in this particular book and another, it's called An Awesome Bird, The Pelican, available, as I mentioned earlier, on all the usual places. You have illustrations, but you also have a section in the book where kids can get involved after reading it.
Yes, all my books have do-it-yourself sections for both the poems and the pictures, and with a prompt. Like I think in the Pelican book, one of the prompts was a tarantula, which kids love that to draw that kind of stuff. yeah.
You just hit a childhood memory, because I remember very distinctly as a child having a tarantula in a jar with a lid on it and holes in the lid, freaking out my parents. Why are you collecting this tarantula? So I just
thought, huge spider. I love it.
So
but you, anyway, on the Pelican book, what happened was I was on a website called Donors Choose, which is like a GoFundMe for teachers. And one of our local teachers was looking for money to buy poetry books for her students. So I contacted her through the website and asked her if I could come in and read one of my books, The Unicorn Has One Horn. And she agreed. And so I got in there and read the book. And these are middle school kids, which are like 12 and 13. So they're a bit older than my target audience. But they were all just so interested and so happy about it that I asked the teacher, I said, why don't we have all these kids do the pictures for my next book? And she was all over it. So she organized that whole process, which took, 4 to 6 months, because they were only work on it on Fridays for an hour or two.
Right.
Some of those kids are so talented. Like the one kid drew a picture of a scorpion, a line drawing, and totally with a pen without an eraser, and it just came out perfect. I was just blown away.
Hmm. And of course, with your background as a producer and in the world of television, you got release forms, I'm sure.
Yeah. The funny story is I had to deal with the Palm Springs School District lawyers, and they said, well, you can't have any kind of a contract with these kids. You're going to have to make up something. So I gave them each $20 and a free book and a bag of chips.
Well, I would think you could get a contract with the kids' parents rather than...
If I was actually hiring one of the kids to do the book, I would get a contract with
okay,
them.
Got it.
Well, that's they weren't actually hired, yeah.
And I would think also that... just that alone, you should be pretty big in that area because the kids are happy to see.
Oh, they love it.
Creations in and the books, and they're going to give tell their friends and their parents, yes. Parents' friends.
And I've actually gone to several different schools since then and read. It's the whole cottage industry out here for me. And the other thing I do is if I make any profit from the Pelican book, occasionally I'll shoot a check over to a thing called an AVID program at the school, which is for kids that are going to college.
Oh, that's great that you're turning some of that money over. Right?
Yeah. Wait. It's not a lot, but, a little bit helps.
There you go. So you got, in the current book, you have about 100 different illustrations. So that means
yes.
You've got 100 kids doing it, or did one kid do
yes.
From one?
What happened was I had, I think, 44 poems, and so I had to pick 44 pictures, but I had at least 100 or 120 pictures, and so I wanted every kid to have an opportunity. So what I did was in the front of the back of the book, I just have a section of all pictures with the kid's name on it. So gotcha. that was what I did for the kids.
So technically, when these kids grow up and they apply for jobs, they have a book credit.
They could definitely, and the kids that had their pictures with the poems could even point to that and say, not only did I get the illustration credit, I was in the book.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's a great idea. What does your wife think about this new vocation of yours?
She loves it. She tried to help me with my social media, but it was just too much work for her. So I had to turn it over to some professionals, but she's 100% behind me, and she loves going to the schools for the readings too. And she helps me when I go, and sometimes I do a thing called literacy night where you go, and I generally just give books away, which doesn't make the people at Scholastic very happy because they're to sell books, but whatever, I don't care. And she goes with me to those and helps me hand out the books. So she's 100% behind it.
When you first started down this road, did you think you would be several books in? In other words,
no.
Okay.
I thought it was going to just be the one-off book, and that was it. And then I realized there's so many animals. There's 30,000 species of animals you can write about. And so I just started collecting these poems that I've been posting on Facebook and my notes app. And then I discovered I had pages and pages. So I was like, want to write another one.
I like the way you are 21st century, even though you're retired and you have an education, you're using the Notes app in your phone. I love it. So
yeah. Well, you always have your cell phone in your pocket, right? So if I'm out driving around, like I passed a herd of sheep one time and I said to myself, I should write a poem about that. So I wrote a poem. The ram will butt you, so too the ewe, if either finds itself with nothing better to do. And I wanted to get that in right away. So instead of having like a notebook, I just have my phone and put it in the notes.
Yeah. So I would imagine that since you've primed yourself to write these poems, that your subconscious is pretty active.
And yes.
It's going to come to the fore. As soon as your eye spots an animal, all of a sudden it's spitting out something to your conscious.
Yeah, it comes to me like that. And if I see, if I'm looking on Facebook and I see somebody post about an unusual animal, I'll grab a screenshot and throw that onto my notes document just so I can reference it later. There's one thing that had a picture of like 14 different species of bats. So I grabbed that and wrote a couple of them. And what I try to do is once I've decided on the animal, I try to research it on the internet to find out like where it lives and what it eats and how it lives and how it reproduces and that kind of stuff. So even though my poems are very short, 12 to 15 words and only 4 to 5 lines, I always try to put something in there interesting about that aspect of the animal.
In your research, aside from going online and looking up different animals, because there's such a wide variety of animals, do you ever enlist the help of your local reference librarian?
Oh, yes. They know me very well at the Rancho Mirage Public Library. And I've donated all my books to them, so they'll have at least one copy in their collection.
I bet they would, yes.
Yeah.
Since you're a resident there. When you decide to write poems, have you thought about haiku?
I did some haiku, but some of my poems might even be haiku, but I don't specifically try for that.
Okay. But it might be in the variety of poems that you write.
It could be. I don't do very many three lines. Most of mine are 4 lines. Some are 3 and some are 5, but most of them are 4.
Okay. I was about to ask you whether you have any long ones, but the longest is 4 lines.
The longest is 5 lines.
Now, I want to bring your wife again back into the conversation.
Okay.
Do you show her the poem to edit it or rewrite it or to give you a suggestion?
Not so much. I like to show her the pictures and see what she thinks about them.
Okay.
But not so much the poems themselves, although sometimes she'll help me with a word or two here and there. Yeah. So it does happen.
I want to go back to the middle school thing, because you said that wasn't necessarily your target demographic, which makes sense. But I was fascinated by the fact that they were fascinated. In other words, when you get to middle school, it's different from elementary school.
Yes.
In terms of the mentality and the approach.
Yes.
Thing. So the fact that they were intrigued by your poems, that's pretty good.
It was surprising to me. They were rapt attention. I had no problems holding them for the whole hour of class reading the book. They paid very close attention, and that's why I got the idea that maybe they should be able to draw the pictures too.
So do you think from now on, every time you have kids do the pictures, it's going to be middle school versus younger? Or
it would have to be middle school, because they're the only ones with the talent. The younger ones, just the pictures just aren't quite there yet. So
gotcha. Well, since you're a big animal fanatic, I know for a fact that you have none of these animals in your house.
No, we have a dog and a cat.
Oh, the normal stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the domestic stuff, I should say.
Yeah. Normal. Although we do live adjacent to the San Jacinto Wilderness area, and there's a lot of coyotes and roadrunners and snakes and turtles up there. So they're close. They're within a few blocks of our house, not in our house.
Yeah, I know. That gives you, I'm sure, great pleasure that you can.
Yes.
Yeah. When you think of these animals that you want to write about, are there some that you look at and you decide for whatever reason, and I don't know what the reason would be, but not to write a poem about an animal?
Yes. Some of them it's just too hard to figure out anything interesting about their lifestyle or how they reproduce or any of that kind of stuff. But for the most part, you can find something interesting about almost every animal.
What's the biggest animal you've written about?
The elephant. I think it said the elephant is big and uses his trunk to pick up water and wash off the funk. Because elephants do that with their trunk. They'll spray their backs down.
Oh, yeah.
To wash them off, yeah.
How do you remember all these?
They're so short and sweet. And when I'm writing a book, I'll have read them, 100 times. So they get in your head.
Now, what's the smallest animal that you've worked with?
Pedro Fine Amuensis. It's the world's smallest frog.
When you say the world's smallest frog, like half an inch or?
It's the size of your thumbnail. Yeah, half an inch.
Okay. Interesting. Now that you're in this new business, do you ever get calls from your old business, since you're now an expert on animals, writing poems about them?
Not from the TV people, but I do connect with a lot of my old colleagues on Facebook that are interested in animals, but not so much from the TV community.
Because I think that also would be a good market for you, is all your former colleagues in the film industry.
Yeah, that's a possibility. The thing is, I've been retired though now for almost 8 years, so mostly, like I say, I just connect with them through Facebook. I think a lot of the technology has moved on so much that I would be lost.
When did you decide to retire, or was there a particular reason that you decided to retire, because you just had enough after working on all those series?
Yeah, working on 16 seasons of Hell's Kitchen, which was over a period of about 10 and a half years, I was just completely burned out and tired. And frankly, when you get the idea behind television is you want to get on one of those shows for about 10 years because you can make enough money to save it all up and retire. And so that's what I did.
Right. And in some cases, especially on the acting side, you get residuals.
Yeah, we don't get that in reality.
Right. Well, the performers get it, though, don't they?
The host gets it. The contestants are contesting. They get the prize, and that's it. They don't get paid any money.
Gotcha. Okay.
Although I have heard that the housewives on Bravo are paid. So maybe that's changing now, yeah.
Do you think that genre is going to go away after another 5 years?
I don't think so. It's going to be around forever because it's just too it's not easy, but it's too accessible. There's always something you can find that somebody wants to see about somebody doing something, you know.
Is it also too because it's relatively less expensive to produce than?
Yes, the way reality started was we thought it was going to be a lot cheaper than scripted. And it is in a way because like a show like, I don't know, this dates me, but Friends, for example, they were paying their principals $1.5 million a week. And so reality shows are nothing like that.
Right. Plus, too, they get residuals when they're rerun.
Yes. Yes. And for Hell's Kitchen, Gordon Ramsay, the host, will get residuals. But reality shows like contestant shows aren't. Everybody already knows the outcome. The whole premise of the show is it's a mystery as to what's going to happen.
Yeah, I gotcha. How many books have you written so far?
I've written 6 books. I have 4 children's books. I have the book Dave and Me, which is my memoir. And a friend of mine, Scott Parker, lives in San Pedro. And he's been collecting baseball newspaper clippings since about 1991. And every year he tells me, I'm going to write a book. And I finally just last year told him, just give me what you got and I'll run the first draft for you. And you can go in and clean it up. And so we did that and came out with a book he calls Baseball's Unlikely a Constant, which has all the baseball stories, all like the record resets and the unusual thing. Like one story we had was about a game that was called because a swarm of gnats attacked the field. So that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's great. Well, the fact that you're able to be so productive and now you're helping your friend write his book as well. Are you going to run out of animals or are you going to keep going with the animal poems?
I'm going to keep going with the animal poems. That's what I like doing the best, just writing those books and then and finding an illustrator to illustrate them.
Are these books self-published or are they published through another organization?
The first 3 books were self-published and then the Pelican book was actually published by a publisher in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with it's a conundrum because when you use a publisher, you get paid a whole lot less than if you self-publish. So I can't really decide what to do exactly about that. But they're all available on Amazon anyway.
Right. Or Barnes & Noble, all the usual.
And also I have them available on Sparks and Ingram, which means you can walk into any bookstore and order it if you want it, or they can order it if they like it.
Very good. When you finish this current one, and again, it's called An Awesome Bird, The Pelican, the book is not just about the pelican. We should make this clear.
No.
That's just the animals in there. You have 40.
Yeah. What I do is I try to go through and pick out the best picture and then make that the cover of the book. And then that'll be the first poem in the book will be from that. So this one turned out to be the pelican. Pelicans are very interesting creatures, too, by the way. The way they hunt and eat and hold all that fish in their beak.
Yeah, that's something we can't do that. So it's fine.
And so the kids really, I got, I don't know, 5 or 10 pelican pictures that gravitated to that. The other one they really liked doing was the axolotl and the toucan.
Can you say that 3 times real fast?
Axolotl, axolotl, axolotl.
All right, close enough. Very good.
It's a Mexican salamander that's about the size of your fist.
Do you find that you're getting inquiries from people that read the books and want to know more about the kind of animals that you're going to write about?
A few of them here and there on Facebook, people will say, what is that all about? And I'll be able to reply to it. And
right.
The thing about Amazon is you get reviews, but they don't give anybody's email address or anything like who they are. So you can't really contact them.
Right. Which is why you have the website now. So
yes, that's right. Yeah.
And which we'll mention at the end as well. Before I let you go, what would you like people to take away from your body of work, but also the newest one, which is, again, it's An Awesome Bird, The Pelican?
Well, I'd like them to take away the fact that for the younger kids, you can open to any page. It's not linear at all. So any page has a self-contained poem and a picture. And for the parents, I want to point out that it has the do-it-yourself section. So Sunday afternoon, kids are bored, set them loose. Let them write a poem and draw a picture.
Now, that's the interesting thing about it. There have been other books where there's been a little work space in the back for people to work.
Yes.
Do you, in your mind's eye, though, who do you see as the primary audience for this book?
I see parents reading the books to their kids from about 3 to 6. And then from about 6 to 9, they could read it themselves.
And have you thought about approaching other school systems in other areas?
I actually did some readings in Torrance, California, which is in L.A., but that's 2.5-3 hours away. So mostly I've just been doing Palm Springs Unified.
But I think maybe even putting some of the books in some of these other schools systems outside of your area.
I should probably do that. Yes. Mail the books to different various schools.
Oh, get around.
I found the more books I give away at the beginning, the more I sell. So
yeah,
it helps.
Makes sense. Well, that's
definitely helps.
That's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Rusty Austin. He's author of An Awesome Bird, The Pelican, which mixes playful rhymes with parenting insights, fun animal facts, and illustrations by middle school students. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and bookshop.org and all the usual places. And for everything about Rusty, you can go to rustyaustin.com, rustyaustin.com. Rusty, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Same here. And join us every Thursday for a new Schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.